Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We begin tonight with the states of emergency in the Northeast at this hour as severe thunderstorms and flash flooding slam New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., New York, and New Jersey tonight declaring emergencies. Drivers rescued from their cars on expressways. The rain falling at a rate of up to 3 inches an hour, flooding sweeping streets and highways, rivers and creeks rising quickly, storm drains unable to keep up.
Japan and South Korea reel from record-breaking heat. South Korea has experienced a record-breaking streak of tropical nights, while Japan saw its hottest day on record on Thursday. According to The Guardian, July 31st, on Thursday, South Korea's meteorological office said the country had experienced a record-breaking streak of tropical nights for 22 consecutive days this month. A day earlier, Japan saw its hottest day on record, with the mercury reaching 41.2 C, 106 F. As hospitals across the country were inundated with people who had fallen ill as a result of the heat wave, overnight temperatures in Seoul stayed above 25 C, 77 F, for 22 consecutive days in July, meteorological officials said, the longest period since modern weather records were first kept in 1907.
That was ABC News with David Muir, July 31st, followed by a reading from the Guardian newspaper the same day. It's almost as though extreme heat and heavy rains amplify one another. As we hear in a new conversation with guest Jan Umsonst in Germany, that is exactly what is happening. Jan explains why with new science. He writes about the relationships between extreme precipitation events and neighboring heat waves. When water condenses into ice and water in the atmosphere, the original energy used to evaporate that water is returned as heat in the upper atmosphere, or at least at cloud level. This heat then strengthens nearby heat waves. Conversely, heat waves can increase chances of extreme precipitation events in low-pressure areas bordering the heat highs, he says. In an email, I asked Jan why giant waves of heat and extreme rain hover over big regions as they are right now, often following one another like a train. In fact, it is called a wave train, and in a few minutes we discuss that in our interview. Jan wrote in a personal email to me, "Large-scale ocean fronts intensify, which support low-pressure systems that reinforce high-pressure systems and blocking patterns, which then produce wave guides, triggering continental heat waves and flooding in the extratropics. The main principle is simple. Local feedbacks interact with regional feedbacks, supported by synoptic teleconnections that create air mass transports or induce persistent wave trains in the jets, all culminating in the intensification of single regional to continental events," end quote from Jan. And unlike many other climate weather feedbacks, we don't know what new limits might be for these extreme amplifications of both heat and precipitation. That assumes there are limits. Jan cites a breaking paper published July 7, 2025, finding an accelerating increase in the duration of heat waves under global warming. That study was led by Christian Martinez Villalobos from the Universidad Adolfo Ibáñez in Santiago, Chile. These scientists find, quote, that the non-linearity results in acceleration of the rate of increase with warming, that is, each increment of regional time-averaged warming increases the characteristic duration scale of long heat waves more than the previous increment. This is very serious. The most deadly and damaging impacts of climate change, heat and extreme precipitation, do not increase evenly as Earth warms. Every fraction of a degree of added heat ratchets up the extremes even more. Former NASA Goddard Director James Hansen also emphasized the nonlinear relationship between global temperature increase and the severity of climate impacts. He says global warming is accelerating. So maybe you have not spent the last 20 years trying to understand how the world weather system works. I know, we're all busy. You just wonder what the heck broke and why is life harder? Why are so many days unbearable and insurance costs higher than the floodwaters? We want to know why and what to expect. Is it going to be safe to live here? Should my family get ready or get ready to move out on short notice? The information we need was never taught in school. Politicians don't get it, and most journalists don't either. The truth is, even the best climate models did not predict this chaotic new reality we experience. Every week, even during the summer doldrums of publishing, startling new science is breaking with bad news about the climate. Yes, it is worse than we thought. Jan Umsonst says people will only believe it when we experience enough discomfort to force change upon us. That's a bit bleak, but it may be true. As I speak, flocks of lightning around my home have ignited dozens of fires in the tinder-dry bush of British Columbia. It is 96 degrees Fahrenheit over 35 C in the shade outside my door. The lawn is brown, with only a teaspoon of rain in the last month or more. It has already been another year of abnormal wildfires in Canada, with smoke adding to the heat waves across the eastern U.S. and dimly visible as far away as Europe. The area burned so far in northern Canadian forests is already twice what was previously normal.
No relief in sight, this never-ending heat wave burning up the night. Streets are like an oven, feel the concrete turn. Melting in the sunshine, can't escape the burn. Every breath I take is like a fire in my lungs. Feels like I'm walking through an inferno. It stings and stuns, mirage plays tricks on me. Oasis just a dream, oasis just a dream.
A paper published May 30, 2025 in PNAS has the title Unprecedentedly High Global Forest Disturbance Due to Fire in 2023 and 2024. Canadian system scientist Paul Beckwith has an explainer video just out on that on his YouTube channel. So the rise of the age of fire is global and now includes 2025. In the distance, I hear helicopters in the hills, dumping water buckets on flaming bush. We check our escape bags again tonight. In the States, it's a different demon right at the moment in the East. After thousands of flash flood warnings over the past month, and sadly many deaths, it's all on again, with unbelievable sudden downpours plaguing small towns and big cities. Friends, I hope humans don't take much longer, that we don't deny the crashing blows until it is far too late. Let's not wait until we lose our homes, our friends, our lives. It is time for change, for real, no BS, real climate action. A listener passed on the Facebook post by Jan Umsonst. He is not a scientist, but describes himself as an Earth system nerd. After 20 years of watching, digging, and taking notes, Jan describes this ongoing quest to know why. In his Facebook feed, he talks about it and keeps pumping information out there for all of us. Here, at the end of a tumultuous July, is our conversation, the first time we ever spoke.
Radio EcoShock.
Well, I'm so glad we really connected because I've been admiring your work and following it. Usually when one of your posts takes me about half an hour of digging to follow up your science and see what you're doing.
I try to track the system. I do it since 20 years. I'm learning Earth and I'm highly fascinated. It's really a beautiful system and has a lot of power. And we underestimated Earth, actually. It's a water planet. Never heat up a water planet fast. First rule in the universe, never do it.
How did you get started in this?
Me? Was 2007. I was in Istanbul. I'm more like a anarchist hippie type punk person. And I heard that the oceans are acidifying. I was like, what? Oceans are acidifying? They are big. And I thought, okay, what's going on? So since then, I wanted to understand what is changing in the Earth system. And I wanted to take part in the resistance in a way. And I came to the idea that I have the only method I have is writing and knowledge. So because I have no money, I have no higher education or something like that. So I started learning and I started to write a book on Earth and the changes. And I called it The Planet of the Crazy Apes, like sci-fi story. But for that, I needed to model the whole Earth system till 2167. So I needed to dig in all this science to be able to change the Earth system accordingly to our impact. And I think after the first week, I started to read studies and I realized, oh, 7 pages, not long, 8 pages, okay. So since then, I read studies. That's how I learn. And studies are nice. It's very compact, the knowledge, and they're actually mostly they're nicely written. And most studies you can, you know what means easily digest, but if you learn the terminology, with time you can really easy read them. And with time, I've stumbled upon more subject in the Earth system. This system is important. What does that change? Or what does this mean? So it got more and more topics. And with time, I started to connect more and more changes accordingly to scientific discussion. So in the beginning, I read single papers. And then I switched to reading the whole discussions. So otherwise, you are not able to understand the positions inside the discussions. And you need to understand the mechanics of the system to be able to understand how systems behave or how they will behave in the future. And you need the mechanics to be to understand how one system change interconnects with other changes. So you can make all these interconnectors, and with time you get like an Earth system model in your head.
Well, I've been doing interviews for about 20 years with scientists, but I have to admit, as I get older, I'm not maintaining a memory of what everyone said. I wish I had one of those memories where every word is still recorded. But what I do retain is sort of overview conclusions about what they had to say and where this fits together. And I find now that they are fitting together better, that I'm getting a better overview of some subjects, even though I can't cite the exact paper that it came from. I have to look that up all over again. I don't know how you work. How do you work? You seem to have quite a flow of new science, but you don't stick only to new science. You follow chains down and will come up with something important from 2020.
The point is, you are not in time. You don't get aware of all these papers. Sometimes you need 2 or 3 years till you find a paper that was important that you missed. So you cannot go just for the newest papers. It's not possible. Often it's deep inside the discussion. So it's aspects of single systems or how systems interconnect or how they recently changed. So you have lots of subjects, a lot of change that are discussed, and you have to go while you get if you get aware of the subject, you have to dig into it. That's how I work. I normally work with citations. I go up and down the timeline. So I find new papers, new aspects via citations normally. Actually, it's a very good method to learn and to research. Just go by the citations of the single papers. With time, you follow more and more discussions. And if you went deep inside a single discussion, you can follow it by the abstracts. So in the past, I read mostly all studies. And now with time, I switched more and more to read the abstracts as I only follow like a follow-up of a discussion. Yeah? It's fascinating. For me, it's like we underestimated what we triggered in the system. And now models are wrong. It's obvious models cannot, they can model single changes. They're very good at these kind of things. But how the whole system reacts, they cannot model anymore. It's too complex and you need too many processes simulated down to small scales. And models use a lot of parametrizations to reduce computational power. But these parametrizations makes it impossible for models to simulate these mutual amplification processes that take no over, and they're normally functional over small scales. So slowly, slowly, the whole thing leaves the model range now. And it's as fascinating as it's frightening, actually.
You know, there's a big debate in AI about whether AI can actually originate anything, because it's trained on all the past data, on all the past sayings and everything that people have written. But the new thing, the new combination is not in there. And I wonder if this applies also to some degree to climate science and models, as you were just discussing, because the models originally were based on sort of normal weather, if you will, or weather over the last few decades by comparison. But we've seen shocking new things that were never in the record, and it seems like those are the things that models most can't pick up.
Mm-hmm. What you see now is weather is becoming climate. In the past, we saw like 30 years, weather becomes climate. But now we have single weather events that reach magnitudes and intensities that they have a longer lasting impact on the climate system, also in terms of warming. And these weather extremes we observe now, which increase much faster than model, be it extreme flooding, for example, extreme heat waves, extreme drought, or the rapid intensification of hurricanes and stuff like that, it increases all much faster than we saw, and also changes in sea ice, like the Antarctic, for example, or the expansion and intensification of marine heat waves, all happens much faster than modeled. And all these changes, they are driven by mechanics that mutual amplify over small scales and short temporal scales, so short spectral scales. So like, for example, take a heat wave. Yeah, heat wave, they get really hot. You need soil moisture to drop below critical levels. So if you have very low soil moisture, you have no evaporation anymore. And evaporation of water cools down the atmosphere. Though if this is not anymore the case, you get higher surface temperatures. Okay, so you get a drier, hotter heat wave. But then comes the next aspect. What we observe now, we get now these areas with large intensified floodings. And these large areas where you have this extreme convection, they produce hot upper air. Because convection or condensation that produces rain releases energy into the atmosphere, and this hot upper air that's produced by these convective systems or regions where you have a lot of precipitation, it comes down over the heat waves. And these heat waves are then heated up even more by hot upper air descending inside these high pressure systems. And like, for example, the first event we had was Lytton, Canada, 2021 was it? West Canada, West Coast, and Lytton inside the Canadian forest, southern part, more near the U.S. border, reached close to 50 degrees. And 50 degrees was not forecasted, predicted, even close in this area. It was about 4 or 5 degrees above normal, these temperatures. And the reason was a strong convection in the Western Pacific, which produced hot upper air that were also coming down in this heat wave. And it magnified it. And now we have the case that we have more and more of these different amplification processes contributing to the single extreme events. That's the reason they're called compound events, where many, many single factors contribute to a single event. And they reach now magnitudes and scales and intensities we did not thought possible before. And these amplifications, for example, between low and high pressure systems, they did not play any role in meteorology or atmospheric physics, because they were only to a minor degree important in a climate system that had not so much energy. But now, with the climate system gearing up to higher levels, these couplings between low pressure and high pressure systems, they intensify. And they can produce then higher rates of precipitation on one side and heat waves that heat up more fast. And this is not inside the models, because models, they don't simulate weather. They don't, like, for example, big Earth system models, they are non-convective models. But you need to be able to simulate all these intensifications, you need convection. That starts. You need soil moisture down to meters depth, not just the surface. Models also don't simulate soils down to the deeper layers, only the surface, like a slab surface to simulate. So you have all these amplification processes models were not designed to simulate, because they also say they don't simulate the small time steps you need for convective systems to build up, stuff like this, or for heat waves to build up. So models are not able to simulate all these processes that lead now to these insane events we have now. So climate models come now to their, it's like the dead end climate models in a way. We need quantum computers to gain the computational power to enable models to calculate all these processes down to small scales and on short temporal scales, so short time scales, like hours best. And you know, it's really frightening what the system is already producing at 1.5 degrees of warming. So it's insane what we have now. You were interested in all these heat waves in the North Africa and Middle East, which reach now insane intensities. That's also one aspect of it.
Yes, it's true that a model may be able to present what the annual precipitation would be expected to be, or even what the monthly precipitation would be. But if that all comes down in 2 hours, that's a very different event. That's a huge, fast flood and people dying. So the model was not necessarily wrong, but it didn't work.
Yeah, the models are, in a sense, they're not wrong. But they don't simulate the scales you need to track these extreme events that come down, like a peak, Beijing. We had no Beijing. We had in 1 week, they had the rain for 1 year. In 1 week, it came down. In two days, they had this maximum precipitation. And so you get precipitation worth of 1 year rainfall coming down in 2 days. And they have a lot of precipitation in China, because near to the tropics, or subtropics. So they reach about, I thought, 700 millimeters was it in a week.
Yes, northern China, they've had their worst flood in 140 years of keeping records was in 2023, and that also flooded parts of Beijing. They had another one in 2024, and now this one, we don't know how bad it will be statistically, but it's quite bad. They lost power to about 180 villages, and there were parts of Beijing suburbs that were flooded, and 30 people were just killed in an old age facility when the floodwaters invaded. Hated it, and they couldn't get them out in time. So very serious matters happening there. Now, in an email, I talked to you, and I think I also posted about this to you on your Facebook feed, which is excellent, by the way, about how we have these waves where, say, the central U.S. is baking in a heat wave, but the western U.S. is actually a bit colder than normal and rainy. So it depends sort of on which side of the jet stream you find yourself. And you cited a paper, and I just want to read a little bit from that paper. The paper was Accelerating Increase in the Duration of Heat Waves During Global Warming. It was published July 7th, 2025. Martinez Villalobos was the lead author for that. And just one sentence from that. We find that the non-linearity results in acceleration of the rate increase with warming. That is, each increment of regional time-averaged warming increases the characteristic duration scale of long heat waves more than the previous increment. So if it goes up 0.1 of a degree, that makes the heat wave just a little bit longer. And that seems like a very worrying sort of feedback. It's not linear. It's much more than that.
I mean, what is interesting, I'm occupied now since some 20 years with this discussion. And in the beginning, like I started in 2007 to learn Earth, that Earth is a highly nonlinear system was clear at that time. And there were not many papers addressing the nonlinearity of the system. And it was more like then in the 20s, late 20s till like 21, 22, the nonlinearity was like, it had like a shadow life in climate science. And now it comes up again because it can't not deny it anymore that the climate system of Earth is highly nonlinear, and each increase of temperature we will get in the future will lead to a much larger increase in extremes or subsystem changes. And that's the most important part, that the Earth system is consists out of a wide variety of subsystems that operate from the local to the planetary. And these subsystems, they are in many, many cases highly dynamic. A subsystem can be, for example, an ocean region that builds up heat waves. So it's just a mixed layer heats up during summer. It can happen very fast. So a large part of a ocean surface can heat up very fast. So it's a highly dynamic system, the ocean surface. Then you have like snow cover. Snow cover can very fast change in a season. You have, for example, sea ice, areas with sea ice that expand in one season, but other areas, they really decline drastically. They're going to have very fast, strong shifts in sea ice. Another example. Then you can have like moisture transport in the atmosphere. In one sector, for 1, 2, 3 days, it can massively increase and pump extreme levels of moisture into a system, which amplify their strong convection and stuff like this and flooding. But in the neighboring region, it intensifies massively a heat wave just per system for a week. And then the whole thing changes again. And another setting configuration takes over. So you have lots of different currents. Also, currents can also change very fast. They can speed up, they can slow down, they can change the course a little bit, stuff like this. And you have now ever more subsystems in Earth that are ever fasting, oscillating, or the variability of ever more subsystems starts to increase. And if you have subsystems like soil moisture over a large area of a continent that is very low, this means the coupling with the atmosphere is intensifying, supporting a massive high pressure system in this area because you have a low convective environment because you don't have any moisture for convection. So it supports the soil moisture as a subsystem, supports a high pressure system, other subsystem in an area, and both get interconnected. Then you get in this high pressure area intensifying, you get in the neighboring areas, you get a low pressure systems intensifying with high levels of rain amount. And also a large scale moisture gradients, you have a large area with wet, like very wet soils and a large area of very dry soils intensifies the convection in the area where you have very moist soils. So these amplification processes between all these different influences, they start now to create a more efficient coupling between the system, the faraway systems also contributing to the intensity. For example, another example, we get no stratospheric warming events in the southern hemisphere. This means